Good evening, everybody. Thank you for joining our Thursday night Mishmar. Tonight's title is something like the following: the history and halacha of the Christian cross. Can it enter our homes and our shuls? But you'll see that even though every year, this time of year, I'd like to speak about Inyan Avodah Zarah, but you'll see that this shaila of what is the halacha of a cross comes into play very regularly. I would like to share with you a text message that my mother, who's with us on Zoom right now, thank you, Mommy, sent me just a few minutes ago when she saw the title to my shiur. Apropos to your speech tonight, my mother wrote to me, I sat then on the train this morning on the LIR to Davin, and a man sat opposite me with a big cross around his neck. I changed my seat. I could not Davin opposite a cross. So that's what my mother did, and therefore I have Alti Tosh Tara Simecha. Mommy, the question is that halachic, your natural tendency, is that a halachic imperative, or is that just a midas chasidus that you have ingrained from your forebearers who took this issur so seriously, as I know certain stories of our family, of our ancestors who were very careful with these inyanim. So these are shilas that come into play. First of all, maybe it's even worse than davening opposite somebody who has a cross on their neck. Maybe it's also a problem for somebody, an electrician, a home health aide, a plumber who has a cross either tattooed on them or around their neck. Maybe they're not even allowed into our house. What do you mean? How can we lock them out of our house? Well, it's a pasuk in Chumash, isn't it? Please look at the first source in Dvarim, Perek Zayin. Psilei Elohim, Tisufun Be'esh, of course, you're not allowed to, you have to destroy Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael. Lo Savi Soiva El Beisecha. You can't bring Avodah Zarah into your house. Sounds pretty serious. Again, we have to figure out what a cross is, and if a cross is an example of Avodah Zarah, but if so, it's usur to bring it into the house. Vayisachem kamahu. It should be destroyed. Shaketz tishaktsenu, v'sa'ev tisa'avenu, kicherem hu. And my mother, of course, had told me the story of her grandfather, who was known as Papa, who whenever he walked the streets of New York City, going back a number of decades, every time he would pass a base of Avodah Zarah, without being more explicit than that, whenever he would pass a base of Avodah Zarah throughout New York City, he would spit on the steps and cross the street, and feeling that very visceral sense of what a Yerpeisha Yid felt about what those base Avodah Zarah stand for, and you all understand what I mean by a base Avodah Zarah. And he would say this pasuk, Shaketz tishaktsenu v'sa'ev tisa'avenu k'cheirem hu. Yeah, nowadays, I don't think he did it in a way that anyone would notice, of course. Yeah, he did. Yeah, obviously, you have to be very careful. I'm not telling anyone to do this. I'm saying that this is how things were, you know, 60 years ago. I'm not telling anyone to do anything of that sort. But let's now dive into the sugya and understand what is halacha, what is chumrah. And specifically, our focus is going to be the cross itself. So we have a Mishnah. Now, one thing that you're going to see is some cutouts or paste sources that are hard to read. The reason why they're hard to read is because it was very important in this sugya specifically to go back to certain editions that are not the same editions that we have, because this Christian censor was heavy-handed in these sugyas. As you'll see, some incredible historical evidence of the censorship involved in this very shaila that we're asking was, what is the status of a cross? You're going to be wowed, literally in a minute, by the difference between the Shulchan Aruch that we have and the Shulchan Aruch that was originally written, of what it says and what it doesn't say. Let's start, before we get to that Shulchan Aruch and two sources from now, let's start with the Mishnah, Avodah Zarah Daf Mem Beis. Zok the Mishnah, Hamotzi Kelim Valeim Tzuras Chama, Levana, Darkon. You see some kind of kelim that has any one of these types of images that you see, there's a certain genre, a sun, a moon, a dragon. So those things, you have to assume that they are made for Avodah Zarah, and Yolichim Liam HaMelech, you have to throw them into the Dead Sea so that they could disintegrate. In other words, you can't get Hana from them. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says, it depends. If you find a kli, let's think for a second. You find a kli, let's imagine, you find a bowl of pottery, and there's a drawing or an insignia of a moon, a sun, some kind of dragon. You have to destroy it. Says Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, it depends on what kind of kli you find it. She'al ha-mechubadim, if it's on a respectable vessel, how about a silver sword? You find a silver sword from the medieval times, and there are a bunch of, these symbols on it. So that would be asr b'hana. She'al ha-mevuzim, but if it's on something as mevuze, that's degraded, that's more, a cheap pottery vessel, we're not talking about that you found a statue of a dragon or a sun or a moon. We're talking about a kli that has inscribed on it or designed in it or etched onto it these illustrations or these carvings. Then, says Rav Shmuel Gamliel, if it's a mechubedik kli, you have to destroy it. If it's a mevuzedik kli, you could assume they didn't use this for Avodah Zarah. They had more respect for their Avodah Zarah, and therefore you don't have to destroy, you don't have to throw it out. Fine. Now, based on that, let's jump straight into the Shulchan Aruch. Hi, Tzafra. The Shulchan Aruch tells us, Tzafra, there's a sheet right there. The Shulchan Aruch tells us a rule for what you could assume is going to be Avodah Zarah and therefore Asur Bahana and whatnot. Kol Hatzlamim Shavodes Kochavim. Anytime you find a little idol, a little figurine that's found in the Kfarim, in the villages, that you could assume is us, or you could assume that was used for Avodah Zarah. Tistam l'shem Avodas kochavim nasu. V'hanimtzam bikrachim, but if you find it in the cities, mutarm devadei l'noi nasu. If you find a statue in the middle of, Times Square, there's a statue of a guy, holding up the universe or something, Rockefeller Center. So when New York City put that statue there, did he do it there, they put it there so that everyone could bow down to it? So Shulchan Aruch tells us we don't assume that. We assume that if in a village you don't have a big population, why is there this figurine statue? It must be they serve it. If it's in a big city, it must be, says Shulchan Aruch, it must be just a decoration, it must be linoi, and that you don't have to assume that it's Avodah Zarah and you don't have to destroy it or treat it as Avodah Zarah. That's the backdrop for the Rama that we need to learn. Let's look at this Rama, and we're going to focus on this Rama, and this Rama is going to be, let's read it the way it is, and then we'll find a surprise about the Rama. Says the Rama, Haga, skip the letters. Tzuros shemishtachavim lahem. If you have any figurines or images that you bow down to, dinam, what's their status of figurines that you bow down to? Dinam kedin hatzelem. Their din is like an idol. Va'asurim, and they're going to be asur b'hana unless a guy is mevatel them. We know that if there is some kind of idol, a guy has the capacity to be mevatel, to render it not considered avodah zarah. That's not our topic. But look at the first five words. Tzuros shemesh tachavim lahem, things that you bow down to, that's going to be asur b'hana. Continues the Rama. Aval oson shetolim b'tzavar lezikaron, but the ones that you hang from your neck as a zikaron, that's not called an idol. Lo mikrei tzelem u'mutter. What do we have the Shulchan Aruch passing, the Ramah passing? The Ramah's passing, that's something that you bow down to, if you have some kind of figurine that you bow down to, that's Avodah Zarah. But if it's hanging around the neck, we assume that's not for bowing down to. And if it's hanging from his neck, it's just decorative. If you look online, or you go to a jewelry store, you'll see that there's an inordinate amount of crosses on necklaces. I assume they're not for worship. They're just, in the same way Jews wear Magen Davids. Sfaradim, go to Eretz Yisrael. I have a student who actually, I did a favor for him, and his father sent me a gift, and it was a necklace with a Magen David on it. So I was very appreciative for the generosity of his thoughtfulness. I think it might even be silver. So if any of you want a silver Magen David to hang down from your neck, please let me know. I have one available for you. What?
It was one of the girls.
It's a boy's necklace. Oh. It's a boy's necklace from a different country. They come from a different country, a different hemisphere. Let's say it like that. So we have the very important Shulchan Aruch that just told us that it depends if anything that you wear from your neck presumably is for noi decoration. It's not a avodah zarah. This seems self-evident. There's a difference between something that's lenoi and that's actually bowed down to. Rabosai, what I just read to you is false. The Rama that you see in front of you is a big fat lie. The Rama didn't write what you see in front of you. What you see in front of you is the Rama that was under the hand of the censor. Let me now show you in this print that is hard to read, the Rama from Dusman Tfusman Toba, which is, I don't know when, how many hundreds of years ago, Mantoba's edition of the Mantoba edition of the Shulchan Aruch was, goes back a few hundred years. Look at the Haggah on the bottom line. That's where the difference is. And you see that the line above this Tfus Mantoba, all you see is Shulchan Aruch talking, the Ramah talking about figurines that you bow down to or that you hang from your neck. Look at what the Ramah says in the real Ramah, what the Ramah really wrote in Tfus Mantoba on the third line. Haggah. It's going to be a little harder to read. I'm going to read it with you. Tsuras Shesi Ve'erev. What's a Shesi Ve'erev? A cross. The tzura of a cross, shemishtachavim lo, that they bow down to, dinu kedin hatzelm, that has the din of avodah zara, that has the din of an idol, v'asr, unless they guy will do bitul. Aval shesi ve'erev shetolim bitzavar, but a cross that they hang from their neck, lizikaron, just as a zikaron, lo mikre tzelm, that's not considered avodah zara. So believe, of course, the censor just took a marker, crossed out the word shesi ve'erev, cross. He crossed out the word cross, right? It sounds funny, but it's not. And you realize what the Ramah's really saying? The Ramah's telling you that a cross, stam a cross, if you just see a cross somewhere, unless it's dangling from someone's neck, in which case it's a decoration, if you see a cross somewhere, that has a din of avodah zara. That's the Ramah's psak. If it's one that they bow down to. If there's one that would be bowed down to. Now, I'm not an expert in this, but somebody told me that in one of the old hospitals, or, you know, hospitals that were church hospitals, by every water fountain, there was a crucifix. Why? So when you would bow down to, you know, take a sip of water, you by de facto were bowing down to the crucifix, Rahman al-Islam. So, you know, when people, sometimes a shul takes over a building like that, or a nursing home sometimes buys these buildings and refurbishes them. So somebody was telling me that he took over such a building, and his family treated all those figurines to a sledgehammer as a way to demonstrate that that wasn't our taste. Leave it at that. So what we have here is the Ramah telling us that if you have a cross hanging down from somebody's neck, it's a design. If you have a cross that might have been bowed down to, that's going to be a din of avodah zarah, a din of an idol. And it's obviously going to be asur b'hana. Now, let's go back. That was the Ramah. Let's go back in history, back to the Rishonim, and look at a very important kula that the Ritva applies to a cross itself. And this Ritva apparently was not censored. And I have an idea why. You know why? Because this Ritva is going to be Mekel. I'm going to show you a different Rishon who lived around the same time period as the Ritva. And we're going to see that it was censored because it wasn't as polite and gentle as this Ritva happens to say. So the Ritva, the censors were probably, I'm scared to say the word B'nai Torah, but they were probably knowledgeable people, intelligent, knowledgeable people, and they picked and chose. What? Right. Mishumadim possibly were involved in the censorship. So let's look at the Ritva. The Ritva talks about what's the status of crosses that you find on various tchotchkes that you might buy. Me'ata, says the Ritva in Avodah Zarah Membeis. Tzuros Shesi Ve'erev, again, of a cross, the figure of a cross. Shergilin Goyim Letzayr Bekelen Shel Kesef. If you would buy, now you buy Becher's, it says, you know, Zachos Yoshas Lekacho. You buy a Becher, my kids have a little Becher that says Yeled Tov. You buy a Becher that says Shabbos Kodesh. Well, if you go back a few hundred years, the Becher's had crosses on them. So you buy one of those. Says there's Rav Ritva, it's Mutter. I thought the cross is a symbol of their service. It's not that they serve. Don't they serve the cross? How could it be mutter? Says the Ritva, 2 points. Number one, Hayadin Vadai, we know certainly, Delo Palchila Bekelim. They might bow down to a cross, but they're not going to bow down to a cross that's etched onto a silver cup. Or imagine, you know, the Excalibur. Imagine, you know, what was his name again?
Arthur.
Arthur, right. Imagine King Arthur's sword. You could only imagine that you know, etched into the handle, the silver handle, there was, without a question, I'm sure there was a cross. So it says the Ritva, yes, there's a cross, but that's not the cross that they're bowing down to. They probably bow down to a cross, you know, in the church, in their in front of their house, I don't know where, but not that's etched onto a kli. That's point number one. Number two, Vlod, this is very interesting. Ella, they don't bow down to all crosses. She'ein, Shehem ain ovden el litzuras shesi ve'erev. They only bow down to the ones, they only serve those crosses. Shetime osa hagalach. That the priest, I don't know, benched. The priest, you know, blessed the priest. I don't know what it, he sprinkled holy water on the cross. That's the kind of cross that they're going to bow down to. But stam a cross on it, you go to a store and they sell silver cups, and all the silver cups happen to have crosses on them. You want to get an outfit a certain time of the year, and all the t-shirts, all the sweaters, they all have crosses on, whatever it might be. So says Ritvam, that's totally mutter, because they're not going to bow down to things on Kalim. And secondly, the only things that are usur, the only types of crosses that are usur are the ones that the priest actually did something to. Yes, Mr. Bergman. Wait, 1 second.
That your mother does go wherever she wants to go.
Yeah, what's that?
Now you can hear why I'm... You haven't heard any of us, but there's a noise in the background.
Okay.
Somebody's not muting himself.
I just muted it.
Okay, I think you might want to go back about 3 minutes because I haven't heard any of it. And most of us have had trouble hearing you because of the loud...
Okay, so I'll just repeat the main point. So you see the Ritva. The Ritva says that a shesiv erev, you heard the point of the Rama with his the change of text, the censorship in the Rama. The Rama says explicitly that a cross does have a din of avodah zara. Now the Ritva comes out with a kula. The Ritva says that if you buy a kli, like for example, King Arthur's Excalibur, his silver sword, there's a cross etched in it, or you buy a silver becher that has a cross etched into it. Says Ritva, that's mutter. Why? Because that's not a cross that they bow down to. They'll bow down to a cross, but not a cross that's part of a kli. You hear the difference between a cross and a cross that's etched or designed or drawn onto a kli? That's point number one. And bullet point number two is that they only bow down to those tsuros of those crosses that the galach was metame, that the galach sprinkled his holy waters on, he blessed, he pronounced, he designated, dedicated. Those are the things that that people do avodah zarah to. But stama kli that happens to have an etching in it, you don't have to be worried about it. Hold on 1 second, 1 second. And therefore, what about coins? Coins throughout the Roman Empire, I'm assuming, and on, had crosses all over the place. Based on what we just said, says Ritva, that's why all these coins are mutter. Vizetam heter matveos, tehavale kedavar bari, not sure what that means, that are not served. People don't worship the coins. The coins are utilitarian. The coins are not designated as religious objects. They don't bow down to them. Even if they're valuable coins, they're chashuv coins, we'll see why he adds these words that they're chashuv, even if they're mechubed, we'll see why that word is important. Therefore, coins are mutter, and utensils that have etchings of crosses on it are mutter. And and that's the kula of the Ritva, yeah.
The manufacturer produces a million crosses for a chain to be worn. It's not blessed by any priest or anything. It's just decorative.
Yeah, so these are two svaras. You're asking what happens if you have one svar. Let's say the Ritva said two svaras. You're asking what if you have one of the two. The Ritva says you don't have to be worried about avodah zarah if it's etched onto a kli, because people don't serve crosses that are part of a kli. They serve crosses, not crosses that are part of a kli. And another svara that the only things that are us are the things that the priest, you know, blessed or sprinkled the water on. You're asking what happens if you have one but not the other. What happens if you have crosses that are manufactured, they're not blessed by a priest or anything, but they're not etched onto a kli, they're a cross itself? That's a good question. I don't have an answer for you. But life is going to get more exciting when we see the Rashba in a moment. And you're going to see it. The Rashba that I'm going to show you is going to be different than the Rashba that you will see quoted by somebody else. You're going to see two versions of the Rashba right now, talking about the same Shaila. And you'll see how fascinating it is to see what happened again with the censer. Because the Rashba is not so generous as the Ritva was regarding a cross. So let's look at the Rashba quoted. I couldn't find where the Rashba was itself, but it's quoted in numerous Rishonim. The number of Rishonim quote this Rashba. Look on the bottom of page one. Kotzav HaRashba. Look how innocuous this Rashba is, and then I'm going to show you the real version of the Rashba. Kotzav HaRashba Zal. Debizman hazeh, shechokekin chakak bekelim. If you etch an etching into kelim, umetzayir behem avodas kochava, and you etch avodas zara into a kli, af hamotzi kelim sheyesh behem dmus avodas kochava, if you find a kli that has avodas zara etched onto it, those kelim that you find would be avodas zara. Not like the Ritva. The Ritva said that if it's just an etching onto a kli, we don't assume it's the kli is going to be avodah zarah. Va'od, and look what he says here. Shekein darkon bibarbari. I don't know what location he's referring to.
Tunisia.
Tunisia?
Yeah, North Africa.
What? Why is that Barbary?
That's
the Barbary Coast. Really? That's the Barbary Coast? Really? Okay, Tunisia, North Africa. Great. So it was the derech in Tunisia, litzairon b'sayif, to etch them onto the swords, ubiklei mulchamtam, and onto their weapons. Look at the next five words. Umigapapin, and they would hug them. Umenashkin, and kiss them, be'es mulchama. Did you ever see a touchdown run? That after the touchdown, he takes out his mezuzah from his chest and gives it a kush? Right? After a soccer goal?
Absolutely.
After a three-pointer? Did Steve Curry have? Was Steve Curry wearing one? I don't know if you're allowed to wear necklaces in the NFL. In the NBA, did Steve Curry wear one last week? So what is he saying? He's saying that I see anyone who's not following basketball is not smiling. Anyone who's following basketball is smiling. Okay, forget that. I teach college students. I have to know where Steve Curry is holding. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not worried about the danger that the Avodah Zarah poses. What we're worried about is that if this will have a halach of Avodah Zarah, meaning it was bowed down to, it was served, it was treated as Avodah Zarah, it's Asr Bahana for you and I. So we're focusing here on the Isr Hana, not necessarily on the danger, the existential danger that you and I will be drawn after. We're talking about the Isr Hana that this has. For example, if you buy a sword, you know, that has a valuable medieval sword that has from the you go to a pawn shop and there's an old sword from 300 years ago that has a cross etched into it. Could you use that sword to cut your orange?
Yes, I think absolutely.
So that's our question. According to the Ritva, yes. According to this Rashba, the Rashba says if it has Avodah Zarah etched into it, you can't. And the reason is because you know what they do when they go to war? On the Barbary in Tunisia, they kiss their swords. During battle, after battle, they kiss the Avodah Zarah on their swords. So that's interesting. But again, this Rashba is talking about an Avodah Zarah. I don't know what the status is going to be with a cross. Right? Maybe a cross will be more lenient. This is an Avodah Zarah that's etched onto the sword, onto their armor. Yeah, they might hug and kiss that B'Shas Melchama in the same way, you know, a soccer player from Argentina might kiss his cross after he scores a goal. That may be, again, cross might be different, we'll have to see. Maybe he has a little figurine hanging down from his neck. If he kisses that, that's going to have a din of Avodah Zarah, it's going to be Asur Bahana. Gentlemen, what you just saw was a farce. That's not what the Rashba really says. The words in blue, if you have in front of you, I think the people who have the sheets, I think you have it in...
It's in blue.
It's in blue? Okay, good. Now look at the same Rashba quoted in a different Rishon, and you'll see the red. And you'll see the difference between the blue words, which was the censored edition, and the red version, which is the original edition of the same Rashba. And you'll see that once you see the red Rashba, it's a little bit more severe. The Nehemuka Yosef in Avodah Zarah on the same sugya quotes the same exact Rashba, word for word, except you see what words really were in the real Rashba. HaRashba Zal Kosev, on the top of page 2, Harash b'zal kasav hilkach. Bizman hazeh, nowadays, that what do people do? Not that they etch avodah zara into their kelim, onto their swords. Shechokikin chikike oven. They etch disgusting etches. Oven is like disgusting, abominable. Iniquitous maybe is the best word. Bekelim, what is that? Umitzayr b'hem, and they illustrate, they design, they etch into their kelim. Shesi v'erev udmus manika. What's the dmus of a manika?
Mary,
exactly.
Mother Mary.
Not my mother. My mother's on the Zoom. She's learning Torah. She's not, you know. So according to that, you see what he's saying? That in a time when they etch crosses or Marys onto their kelim, if you would find such a kli, af hamotzi kelim sheyesh bem dmus manika v'shesiv erev asurim, since they etch those on with certain intents, if you would find such a kli, or buy one in a pawn shop, it would be asur behana to use that kli. And furthermore, now you could go, now when we read this last sentence, you'll see how applicable it really is. Va'od, and this is the Darkan in Barbary. He's quoted that same place in Tunisia, that they etch them onto their swords and onto their metal weapons. Umigap bin umanashkin be'eshas mechama. They hug and they kiss their crosses. So you see that the real Rashba was talking about mamish, you know, what that soccer player does after he scores his goal in Argentina or in, I don't know, wherever else, you know, where they're very stark in Spain, where they're very stark in their Christianity. So this cross, the Rashba says explicitly, this cross in a place where they kiss it would be a din of harazan. If you would find one in the streets, even though it's not a cross, it's a cross that's etched onto a kli, the kli is aser. Rabosa, we have a machlokas. The Ritva told us a few lines up. The Ritva, who wasn't censored because he wasn't so severe, he said, nowadays you don't have to be worried about a cross, maybe, but a cross that's etched onto, he talks about crosses explicitly, a cross that's etched onto a kli, they don't serve it as a avodah zarah, and the rabbi, the priest, I'm sorry, Lahavdil, didn't sprinkle it, so it's mutter. Rashba says, if you find a kli that has an etching of a cross on it or a Mother Mary etched on it, it's going to be asur bahana because they kiss it during milchama. So, what's the hana? Let's say it's a cup. You can't drink from it. Let's say it's a sword. You can't cut your tomatoes, your oranges with it. What? So what's the status of a statue of David? So if it's something that would be people would bow down to, then it would be mamash avodah zarah. If there would be some who bow down to it, that would probably give it a status of avodah zarah, even though others only look at it as a thing of beauty.
Maybe they're not doing the right avodah zarah; they're just bowing down.
It doesn't matter if they treat it like an avodah zarah, it will make it into avodah zarah. I think so. Yeah, it's a good point. Okay, so we just saw. The Ramah was played with. We saw the Rashba was censored. And we're coming out with really a machlokas Rishonim. If you have a cross that's etched, that's part of a bigger item, is that item going to be Asur Bahana? Now, the Shach, Rabosai, who's probably the most important, or one of the two most important Mefarshim al-Shulchan Aruch, believe it or not, he also was censored, so shocking. When did the Shach live? Anyone know when the Shach lived? Right, in the Chmelnitsky in 1648, in the Chmelnitsky.
He lost his daughter, he chased all over Europe trying to find his daughter.
Yeah, so in the mid-1600s, early 1600s, that's when the Shach lived. The Shach relates to the Shulchan Aruch that we learned, and the Shach points out something. We're going to see the version of the Shach that's in our version, and then I'm going to show you the defus I was able to find on Otzach HaChma, the first defus, the first edition of the Shach, that was probably printed hundreds of years ago. I don't know exactly, I didn't get the year, I didn't have the cover page, but I was able to find it, and I have it here. You'll see it is a little bit hard to read, but we could make it out, and you'll see some differences. Look at the Shach. the Shach talks about when the Shulchan Aruch said, the Ramah, if you remember, the Ramah said that a cross that's hanging from a necklace is mutar bahana, right? Says the Shach, look at the first line of the Shach. Hainu, biyadua shelo hishtachav elo. The only time that the cross on the guy's neck is mutar bahana is if you know certainly that he didn't bow down to it. Because if you're not sure, then it's just like a kli that you found. And if you just find a kli that has avodah zarah on it, then people might have bowed down to it and it's aser. Now, ignore my English words. Look at the bullet point. Ignore my English words. U'avodas kochavim atzma. The Gemara told us, which we're not going to look at inside right now, the Gemara told us in Avodah Zarah that if you find kelim, it depends whether they were valuable, mechubadika kelim, or miyastika kelim. If you found mechubadika kelim, you have to assume that maybe they were served. If you find your cheap kelim, pottery, that have designs on them of a moon, a sun, a dragon, then if they're cheap kelim, you don't have to assume that they were Avodah Zarah. Now look what the Shach says about it. Uva avodas kochavim atzma, if you find kelim with those designs on them, like a sun and moon, then it depends whether they're nice or not nice kelim. But if you find avodah zarah itself, it doesn't matter whether they're nice or not nice. Meaning, if you have a kli that has a design on it, then we have to be worried that if it's a fancy kli with this design, maybe they did for avodah zarah. If it's a cheap kli, maybe not. But if you find avodah zarah itself, if you find a cheap pottery figurine, Buddha, a cheap pottery one, the ones that you could buy for 99 cents at the airport in India. I went to India and I got myself a Buddha. So that's not a mechubadika one. But if it's real Avodah Zarah, like a Buddha, then it will be treated as Avodah Zarah, says the Shach. That's the Shach that you will find in your Shulchan Aruch. Rabosai, let's look at the original Shach in the first Rishon, the Shach's first edition. One second. Let's look at the first word. The first word of this Shach, and again, the first Rishon, Shin Vav. Does anyone know what that Shin Vav stands for? Shesi Ve'erev, yeah. The Shach that we have didn't even have that word, Shesi Ve'erev, a cross. Shesi Ve'erev, Hatolim B'Tzavar, that's hanging from a neck, that's what the Ramah was talking about, the original Ramah, not the one that was censored. Go down to the next line. One second. The third line, the last word, Dekeven Shederach, fourth line. Dekeven Shederach lavod osa hatsura. That word did not appear. Since it is their way to serve osa hatsura, since it is their way to serve that tsura, that image, meaning the cross, Chayshin and Shemanis Abdu Hakelim. We're worried that maybe these Kalim with a cross on it was worshipped. Fine. Next line. Vahachanami ikal mechash lahachi ubeshesi ve'erev a'ah. So he says that's the question where we determine whether it's a fancy kli. Do you have to be worried? Was it served? Was it worshipped? Was it not worshipped? Fine. But now look at the fifth line, in the middle of the line. Uveshin vav atzmo, but in a cross itself, we did not have that word in the Shach that you have and I and you and I have in our Shulchan Aruch. Again, fifth line. Uveshin in the middle of the line, uveshin vav atzmo, in the shesiv erev atzmo, in the cross itself, ein lechalek. You can't distinguish whether it's a fancy one or a cheap one, ben mechubadon levazui, because only by kelim do we say that if it's part of a kli, then it's nice, that they might have served it, worshipped it. If it's cheap, they probably didn't. But if it's a cross itself, any cross, you have to assume was worshipped.
When does it become avodah zarah?
Once it was worshipped.
When it
could be that if it was made for the purpose of being, a divine or a worshipping item, that might be. But certainly, under all circumstances, once somebody worships it.
I thought we were going to. What does it mean, worship?
Bow down to it, kiss it, hug it, pray to it. Like the Rashba told us, kissing it is sufficient, the Rashba told us.
But no one's kissing it with the idea that this is an actual God.
I don't know if you have to say that it's God or you have to kiss it because it represents God. Yeah.
Okay.
What are you kissing?
Right.
I mean, lahavdil, 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 we kiss the mezuzah not because we don't think the mezuzah is God, but we think the mezuzah connects us to God, reminds us of God. Lahavdil, lahavdil, lahavdil. There's no halacha to kiss the mezuzah.
No, lahavdil would be. You know, if the Catholics had a rule that any of these Jewish avodah zarahs are usher to use, would they say that the mezuzah would be usher? Would be
used? I don't know. I don't know.
Because it's not really worshipped; it's a remembrance.
I hear. I don't know.
I'm a little bit confused about what exactly is being done with the cross.
I don't know. Okay. If you want to look through for fun, there are some other very explicit lines here that he talks about a cross, and he talks about, again, an Isha whose B'na B'cheka, whose child is in her bosom, again, Mother Mary.
Madonna and child.
What's that, Madonna?
Madonna and child was the motif for so much medieval art.
Okay, Madonna and child, thank you. Yeah. You're more cultured than I am, I suppose.
Wrong culture.
Well said. But you notice that all those references in the shach that I have in front of you on top of, you know, on top of this Tefus Rishon, none of them are there. Okay. Now, fine. So we just came out that the shach comes out that we basically have to be concerned whenever you have a cross, that the cross is going to possibly be avodah zarah. Now, let's turn to the next page, page 3. 1 second. Okay. There's something called a rosary bead. Rosary beads. I did a little bit of research. I'm not a buck in rosary beads. So there's a little cross, and there are beads. They use them for
prayer.
They don't pray to them, but they're a tool. You know, like when I'm always nervous I'm going to forget Mashav Ruach Mer Hagashim, right? So I put a tissue in the sitter, or a card, an index card in my sitter. When I get to Mashav Ruach Mer Hagashim, when I say it, or Saint Talmud Tavrach, I just slip it into my jacket pocket. Okay, lahavdil, 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 lahavdil. That's what they use their rosary beads for. They want to make sure they remember all of their prayers. So, could you get into the business of rosary beads? Is that a avodah zarah? So, Rabbi Bose, look here at this. The Darchei Tshuva is one of the mefarshim, the later mefarshim, on the Shulchan Aruch. And, no, next one. He quotes the Shailos HaTshuvos. This is second to bottom paragraph of page 3. Ayin b'tshuvas vayomer Yitzchak, who discussed Sheherich Tuva le'inyon Tzuras Shasiv Erev hanimtza b'katla'os shel chulios. Chulios are rings or beads. Katla'os, I'm not sure what the English translation of that word is. What? A choker, that could be. In the Mishnah, talks about a choker. So, yes, like a necklace with.
Keitel in Europe, in German, in Yiddish means a chain.
A chain, okay, great. A chain of beads.
You know, usually a necklace, maybe.
Great. So the question is, we'll send someone down if you need. Vidas HaShoel. And the one who's asking the question is wondering if this is going to be, going to be considered avodah zarah or not. And the question is, it isn't avodah zarah. It's something that reminds them, you know, to say, to, you know, that they shouldn't forget. There are 10 beads. There are 10 Hail Marys, times 5. I don't remember. I looked up on Wikipedia a little bit about it, but I don't want to hear, you know, come across as the expert in Hail Marys. But look what I underlined. Masha dakel his palal bo, that which they daven, that which they pray using these rosary beads, ena l'shem avodazara, l'shem avodil avodazara, that itself is not, the bead is not the service. The bead is just providing them with the rakli zikaron ba'alma, shlo yizbata machshavto. V'yehei zocher b'tfilaso, you should remember that they shouldn't have missed a prayer. So is that avodazara? Let's say you found one on the street and it's made out of some expensive metal. So are you going to therefore be you can't pick it up and take the metal and melt it down? Says this tshuva. Even if it has after the underlined line, the line below the underline. Even if we say the cross is aser, because oftentimes on the top of the rosary beads, there's a cross with the beads hanging down. He says, even if you assume the cross is aser, but the whole thing in itself is not made for avodah zarah. He says, nevertheless, I wouldn't be matu that. Fine, okay. Now we know not to invest in rosary bead companies. I think that was not the most important chiddush. What I want to finish off with is this fascinating Trumas Hadeshen. This fascinating Trumas Hadeshen. I mentioned it in Mincha Meir for a minute. And this Trumas Hadeshen was asked, or he asked, if you have a bishop, look at his shaila, the bottom of page 3. Komer Takif, a powerful bishop, we'll finish off in 3-4 minutes. Osar. The bishop is wearing a cross. Now, Rabosai, you might have heard of a certain yeshiva in the New York area that a number of years ago had a visit by the cardinals. A whole bunch of cardinals from around the world came to visit the yeshiva. They wanted to know why the Jews are so successful in maintaining, the Orthodox Jews are so successful. They wanted to know what this chavrusa thing is. And they came to a certain base manager in the New York area. And a bunch of cardinals in full regalia walked into Beis Medrash with their crosses and got to observe chavrusa learning. And they realized how incredible the concept of a chavrusa situation is. So is he allowed to go into a Beis Medrash with a necklace, with his cross? Is the person, whoever it is, allowed to come into your house with his cross on his neck? Or my mother's shaila, is she allowed to daven? Is my mother allowed to daven opposite a guy who's wearing a cross? Or the way the question is asked in front of us in the Trumas Hadeshen, if you have a bishop who the minhag is you bow down to him because he's a chashava nobleman, oftentimes the bishops and nobility work together in much of Europe for many, many, many centuries. So you're going to bow down for the nobleman. He happens to be the bishop too, wearing a big cross on his neck. Are you allowed to bow down to him? Are you allowed to tip off your hat to him? Asks the Trumas Hadeshen. Interesting that the idea of tipping off your hat is an ancient, already goes back many, many, the Trumas Hadeshen was when? The 1400s? Maybe earlier. Trumas Hadeshen is the 1300s, 1400s. So this is going back 700. The idea of tipping off your hat or taking off your hat, like when you pledge allegiance, when you sing the Star Spangled Banner, Americans will take off their hats and out of COVID. So are you allowed to take off your hat for somebody who's wearing a cross on his neck? So says the Trumas Hadeshen, you should definitely avoid bowing down to that. You know why? Because we know that every avodah zarah has its way of serving it. But when it comes to four types of services, one of them being hishtachava, then every single avodah zarah, even if it's not darko bekach, Hishtachava is considered a violation of avodah zarah. So, for example, if a cross, even if the way they serve crosses or Christianity is not by bowing down per se, but hishtachava by definition, bowing down by definition, is considered an avodah, and therefore would be an avodah that you're doing towards a cross, and therefore, again, he's talking about a shesir erev, explicit. Trumas Hadeshen is explicitly talking about a cross. You cannot bow down. So, Mami, if you would be davening on the LIRR and bowing down during Shemar Esrei for the brachas that you bow down to, the Trumas Hadeshen would definitely say you would not be allowed to bow down opposite this person. That seems to be the first point. Then he tells a story. Look at the top of page 4. He tells a story, I think it's a fabulous story. I have to remember it and say it in some other context. There was a very wealthy bishop in Vienna. He was called the bishop from Prussien, I don't know how to pronounce that word. And he was in Vienna, and he was a tremendous landowner, it seemed. And he had a big, he had a cross on his sleeve, and he liked everybody to bow down to him. Forget the cross, he liked the covet. And he knew that when the Jews would come to, for whatever land reasons, for whatever real estate reasons, would come to him, maybe they would pay their rent to him, because he was a big landowner, he wanted them to bow down to him. But he knew that the Jews wouldn't bow down because he's wearing a cross on his sleeve. So you know what he did? He rolled up his sleeves to provide a hechatimsis that all the frum Jews would be able to give him the covet that he wanted. A smart man. He wants covet. He'll get his covet. Oh, he has to roll up his sleeves. Okay, he'll roll up his sleeves, cover the cross that he's wearing. The Jews don't see a cross. Now they could bow down to him and give me the covet that I want. Fascinating story. Says the Trumas Hadesh, I remember that story in Vienna from my youth. This is going back 700-800 years. I remember that. It sounds from that memory that I have in my youth of what the Jewish community of Vienna 800 years ago did. It sounds to me that you wouldn't be allowed to bow down to a cross, and that's why this bishop had to roll up his sleeves. It's almost funny. The Trumas Hadesh is bringing a raya from this egotistical bishop as to what the halacha, what the Jewish tradition probably was. Fascinating proof, fascinating story. And therefore, it sounds like it should be asked from this story that I remember from my youth, says the Trumas Hadesh. And then in the second paragraph, he says, but no. I don't think it's so usher, because I found a tshuva from Rabbeinu Yitzchak Oppenheim. Who is Rabbeinu Yitzchak Oppenheim? A very nice Ashkenazi name. I have no idea who he was. Never heard of him. Very Ashkenazi name. Again, the Trumas Hadesh was one of Ashkenazi Rishonim, but you see that already that name Oppenheim is already an 800-year-old surname, which is pretty good. Mr. Berg, what does Oppenheim mean? Open home?
Yeah, sounds like it.
Open home, okay. Oma, does Oppenheim mean open home, Oma? You're our German linguist here. Okay, fine. So look at what Rav Yitzchak Oppenheim says about this shaila, and we'll finish with this tshuva in just 2 minutes. The question is, again, you have a bishop who has a cross, and are you allowed to stand up for them and tip your hat for them? Says the Rav Yitzchak Oppenheim, I think you can. Nearly shemutil hishtachvos lahem v'lakum upneim, and to tip off your hat for them because of them. Because are they saying that they're avodah zara? Are they saying that I am avodah zara when the bishop deifying himself? No, the bishop is not deifying himself. Why does the bishop want to be bowed down to? Not because of the cross that he happens to be wearing around his neck. He wants to be bowed down to because of his personal covet. Are you allowed to bow down for someone who wants covet? We have a raya from Haman. The Gemara says by Haman, that by Haman, since he deified himself, it was also for Mordechai. That's why Mordechai didn't want to bow down to him. Let's learn from that, that for a human being who doesn't deify himself and just wants to be bowed down to, it's mutter. So the bishops, says Rav Yitzchak Oppenheim, they want you to bow down to them, not because of the cross per se, they just want to be bowed down to. Therefore, he says it should be mutter if it's for a person who didn't deify himself. But Rav Yitzchak Oppenheim concludes, if you do bow down to this bishop who happens to be wearing a cross to give him the covet, he says, Mikol makom ya'atzim einav b'chol eicholos. Try to close your eyes as best as you can. So you shouldn't even be seeing the cross as you're bowing down. If you have to stand up for him, stand up for him way before he comes, so it shouldn't appear as though you're standing up specifically for him. So even though the Trumas Hadesh said, I think it should be usher personally, he quotes this Rav Yitzchak Oppenheim, who seems to say that Meikra Hadin, it's mutter, but just try not to look as best as you can. One last point with which we'll finish is an area where this shaila comes into play where you would never imagine it. Sukkos. Where in Hilchos Sukkos is there halachas of Avodah Zarah? Yes, the Rush here in Sukkah, Perek Gimel, talks about how you're supposed to shake. You know, there's the Ashkenaz and Sfarad and our shul. You get all mixed up because we have both minyanim in our shul. How do you do the Nanuim?
The Rush
says that there were some Rishonim who said, don't do it like this, because if you do it like this, whatever this was, you know, right, then right, we know some people go in a circle, other people go right, left, up, down. Says the Rosh, that's a cross. You know, like the, again, like after they score the three-pointer, the ones that don't have the necklace to kiss, they cross themselves. So here you shake it, you're shaking a luluf like a cross, up, then down, then right, then left. It looks like a cross. And the Rosh says, no, we don't have to be worried. You know why? Because we don't do four-directional shaking of the luluf. We do six-directional shaking of the luluf, and that's not a cross. Cross is only four directions, and this is six directions, and therefore there's no problem. What you see from the Rosh is if you would indeed shake in four directions or do, you know, cross your body in a way, you're not crossing yourself. You're, for heaven's sake, you're shaking a luluf and esreg. The Rosh says even that presumably would be asur, if it indeed would be in four directions, because you're imitating or copying. So, Rabosa, what we saw this evening, maybe next week we'll talk about the letter X and multiplication signs, meaning when you have a cross on an angle. Yes, there is literature about what a plus sign also. What we saw tonight is that, you know, there are, these shilas are serious shilas. The shilas are relate to, you know, the jewelry that people buy, the items that people buy, and where you daven. And we should be zocha to fulfill the time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows us, the MS, and the MS will scream for every street corner, and those who are carrying mistaken icons around their neck should realize that they are mistaken icons, and we should be zocheh to the Geula Shlema. B'mehir v'yameinu amein.
Really quick, Rav Naftali Yeager told the story. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Tells the story when he went collecting on 47th Street with his shver, the Colonel of Rav Shlomo Freifeld. So they went into some manufacturer of jewelry, a Hasidic guy, and he was on the phone with someone else, another Hasidic, speaking in Yiddish, and talking about making a huge production of crosses. They were talking about producing crosses, and how many, and what kind, and what color. And so the guy on the phone in his office, they were waiting for him to finish, said to his compatriot, he says, "Ein Shaila, mit der Mamzer zu on der Mamzer." I don't know what that means, I don't want to translate. That was his question as to the production.
Okay.
That expresses their view of their